I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit truegreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit truegreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's truegreen.com. Get started now. Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. I'm your host, Rick Gaiman, and despite not having any quote-unquote real golf for this week, we've got plenty of storylines to talk through, so I've assembled the team. Let's start. Kyle Porter, welcome. Good morning. Happy Monday.
Yeah, it's a short week. It's a good week. PGA Tour is over. This is vacation, almost, kind of. I mean, we got a lot going on, but yeah, I'm excited about this week and excited what we have to talk about today.
Yeah, there is quite a bit to talk about, despite, you know, the PGA Tour being done for the calendar year, the European Tour wrapping up with their race to Dubai, but plenty of storylines. So also joining us, Mark Immelman is here. Mark, I've got a lot of interesting questions that I'm going to need your opinion on. But first off, good morning and welcome.
How's it? Good to be with you guys again. And talk about vacation. For the first time in a long while, I don't have any golf lessons scheduled. There's no golf broadcast to be done. I'm enjoying Monday off. So Thanksgiving is coming a little early in the Immelman household right now, which is cool.
Good for you. You are on vacation. I love it. Well, we're going to make you work here for a little bit longer. So let's hop into this.
All right. Luckily, this is not broadcast because I'm kind of like I've just gotten out of bed.
Beauty. Well, let's start with the RSM Classic last week. And quite honestly, a little bit under the radar in terms of storylines going. Tyler Duncan jumps out and fires the lowest round or tied for the lowest round of the day on Sunday to capture the RSM Classic in a playoff after beating Webb Simpson, who can just not seem to win this golf tournament. But the real storyline out of this, and there's just such a great note that we have, is Tyler Duncan's biggest win before this week was the Indiana State Amateur title. That's awesome. Started the week ranked 378th in the world, will now be ranked 170th. Mark, let's start with you, because coming into the week, there was a lot of talk about Brendan Todd going for his third straight win. You know, Webb Simpson commanded a lot of the attention over the course of this week as well. To me, someone who was just following along with this, you know, Tyler Duncan just pops his name up at the top of the leaderboard and wins this thing. So is there a benefit or a perk involved to kind of flying under the radar, a little anonymity in a golf tournament on the world's biggest stage?
There is a little bit, but I think back to a couple of years ago when Tyler Duncan got a sponsor's invitation to play in the Safeway Open, and through 2.5 rounds, he was atop the leaderboard. And I was out there on the call, and he looked like he was born to be in that place. He was calm, he was cool, he was collected, the game was there. And so that's sort of the preamble to my observation. Whether there's anonymity or not, you've still got to go out there and play. And as soon as one plays a good round, then, you know, the mind starts to wander. And it's like, oh, well, you know, I can get the big finish, maybe the win. And then this is a guy that went, what was it, 54 holes without making a bogey. He made his first bogey in the event on the first hole in the final round. So perhaps there's some advantage when you've got the spotlight shone on other people. But there's that personal spotlight that one shines on oneself. And when you're going well, your mind can start to wander. But, man, what a performance he put together, especially on that final day in some blustery cold conditions. And Seaside is visually imposing, that golf course. And He was ball striking was there, mindset was there. To close with two birdies, I mean, you should get a free game if you birdie the 18th hole of that golf. And birdie to post and get in a playoff, there was some special stuff. And he looked like he had been there all of his life.
Yeah, and I really love seeing a guy make a putt to win an event in a playoff as opposed to someone missing a putt and giving it to him. But, Kyle, let's turn to you. I mean, Tyler Duncan is a guy that we have seen, you know, one round in every tournament or two rounds in every tournament. He's been able to kind of play well. But this is really the first time we've seen him put all four rounds together. And I believe he is now the fourth first-time winner in just the first 11 events of this year. So what are your takeaways from this fall season and Tyler Duncan capturing the RSM Classic?
Yeah, it's kind of incredible. I was just writing about this and sort of juxtaposing Duncan to Webb. Webb in, you know, in his amateur career and his college, I mean, he won everything, right? He's won a U.S. Yeah. Open. He's won a Players. All this stuff. And I mean, there's a great sort of slip in, I was reading the transcript this morning in Duncan's press conference last night where the question asker, I have no idea who this was, says, "I apologize for not knowing this, but on the telecast, they said your last victory might have been the 2011 Indiana amateur." Because it's like at this level, when you're talking about the PGA Tour, even in the fall, these are guys that like, won, you know, USGA events growing up, AJGA, like USAMs, Junior AMs, all this stuff. And this guy's like, I mean, I'm scrolling through his profile on the Purdue golf website, and it's like, he was second team All Big Ten. And you're like, what? Like, how does this guy get to a place where he's taking down a top 10 player in the world in Webb Simpson in a playoff? It's just, I think to me, and Mark talks about this a lot, and I agree with it, it always points back to how great golf is, because you have to go out and actually do it. And that's what Duncan did on Sunday.
Yeah, it's really funny. I spend a lot of time in like the fun facts section of the PGA Tour player profiles. And yeah, you're right. Every guy's a multi-time All-American. They were the state champion four times in a row. Like these guys have quite the resume. But let's segue into Webb Simpson, Kyle. I mean, this guy, another runner-up finish. He's got four runner-ups in his last 10 starts. He's the 11th ranked player in the world. He's been inside the top 10 on the money list the last two seasons. I'm starting to think he's one of the most underrated players on tour. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong. I think when we think about Webb, everybody's like, oh, yeah, you know, nice guy, good dude, won a U.S. Open. There was that bird thing. That was weird. He's like one of the 12 best golfers in the world. And, I mean, I made a list here. So most underrated, I would go, this is just like scrolling through the world golf rankings and just super quick. So I would get a lot of surprises in here for you guys. Webb, Cantlay. Bernd Wiesberger, who's ranked ahead of Ricky Fowler, by the way, unbelievable.
Crazy.
Sung Jae, our guy, and Xander. I think those are probably five of your most underrated guys in the world. Maybe you could throw John Rahm in there. I know we're going to talk about him in a little bit, because as good as people think he is, I think he's even better than that. But yeah, Webb's right there, and I think that he's so consistent, and he went out as somebody who was the favorite of this event, and you know, he was leading after the first round. He's kind of going like, he's just like the guy to beat, and he goes out and plays like it, and that's really impressive. That's hard to do, and I just think he's somebody that we need to think about as like one of the 10, 12, 13 best guys in the world.
Yeah, Mark, I'd love to get your opinion on Webb Simpson, and also along with that, you know, the RSM Classic has kind of been a little something in the side of Webb. You know, he's been close so many times. He obviously plays very well here, but haven't seen him raise the trophy yet. And listen, I know golf is as volatile and as crazy as everybody, but, you know, is there a little something that Webb Simpson might be waking up this morning? Like, hey, can I win this thing? Like when Sergio was like, maybe I'll never win a major. Like, what are your takes on that? Like this little, you know, thorn in the side of Webb Simpson?
Well, first off, we got to give Webb Simpson some love. I mean, this guy, people forget he was dominant when he was in college at Wake Forest. I mean, this was the guy that was kind of the can't-miss kid and came out and had a good career, got the early major championship, and then fell on hard times with the putter issues and the anchoring and that sort of thing. But to speak to the mindset that this guy has and employs, when the ban came down, he broke that belly putter over his knee. He told us, because this was him saying, okay, I am all in now, no excuses, this is what I'm going to do. And the game kind of went sour some, and then he got that putter thing figured out. Now, statistically, he is as sharp as anyone in the game. And aside from that, now to contrast to Tyler Duncan, for argument's sake, Webb wins. He used to in college. He used to as an amateur. And now Webb is getting to the PGA Tour. No weaknesses. Putts great. Has that winner's mindset. And whenever this guy plays, I mean, you highlighted, Rick, the four runner-ups in the last 10 events. That is some golfing over there. And two finishing runner-up again at Sea Island. The course is kind of built for his style game. It's just in all four of those editions, there's been one guy that's done something a little more special than he has. So it's not that he's not going to win. It's just that, you know, fields are deep, to Kyle's point. And you have that one guy that puts together a final round of 65 like Tyler Duncan. Birdie's the last hole to get into a playoff. Look, Webb did the right things coming down the stretch. He birdies 15, he birdies 16, makes the good save on 17, makes a par on 18. Any other year, in those conditions, he may have won. It's just how golf goes, you know?
Yeah, winning on the PGA Tour is extremely difficult unless your name is Brendan Todd, who for now the first time in basically a month looked human in the final round at the RSM Classic. He shot a 2-over in the final round and ended up finishing in fourth. Mark, I want to go right back to you with this because something came up on the telecast that I thought was really interesting, and I wrote it down for this exact moment for you. I don't remember who said, but one of the commentators described it as the weight of being in contention for three straight weeks, where basically 12 rounds in a row, this guy has basically been in contention, had to deal with the stress, had to deal with everything that goes along with it. And I really wanted to get your take on the idea of that and having, we've talked about stress-free rounds before. Brendan Todd has not had a stress-free round in quite some time. And I made a note to ask you about that comment.
Well, there is a weight, and I know for the listener to this guy, they're going like, well, whatever, man, these guys have a jet for seasons. And look, that's true. But what you must realize for the guy in contention, they're normally in one of the last groups, let's say on Saturday, right? So they get done late, especially now in the fall where it gets dark early. Then you've got to go and do some media, which will take you, you know, depending on how noteworthy you are, anywhere up to an hour. Then you back in the car, and then you go and grab dinner, and then you back to the hotel room. And so by this stage it's 9:30 p.m. if not later, and then you sort of unpacking all the stuff in your mind, and the mind is still running rampant. The body might be physically exerted from the long days, and then you got to lay down there and try and go back to sleep and wake up refreshed for another challenging emotional and mental day on the final round. So there's that's always brought to bear for the leaders, is the not the lack of sleep, but the fact that it's hard to sleep. And of course, fatigue makes cowards of us all, right? So there's that's on the go. There's the playing under the pressure, which is demanding. And when you're playing, you know, sort of finishing 30th in whatever field you're playing in, there's less pressure. Guys are free swinging and such. But when you're in contention, when you've got galleries, when you've got TV cameras around, all that sort of stuff, it does add a weight to the whole job. And winning is not easy. The fields are so deep, but the emotionality of it all, the mental challenges of it all, the physical exertion of it all is a real deal. And to do that, you know, almost 3 weeks in a row, it's incomprehensible for most human beings.
Yeah, I really love that answer, and it makes a lot of sense. And Brendan Todd, Kyle, he's now up to 72nd in the world. He puts a bow on the fall season here. He's going to head into 2020 as the FedEx Cup leader. Could you have imagined this in any way 12 weeks ago?
Well, not when he started his first four events of the fall, miscut, 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 and you're like,
that's not a good start.
Yeah, but at that point, you're like, oh yeah, you know, whatever, like it happens, and he's not, you know, he just is who he is, and then all of a sudden, you're like, wait a second, like, is he gonna win three in a row? I mean, Justin Wright tweeted it out, but like the guys who have won three in a row, over the last, whatever, half century. I don't know. His stats are absurd. But it's a joke of a list. And Todd was, you know, a few strokes on Sunday from making that happen. So I just, he has to be going into 20 with just a ton of confidence. And we're going to talk about this again later, but he's done this a little bit before, kind of a mini version of this, and I'll save the stat for later, but it didn't go great afterwards. So we'll see how he responds in 20, sure. But obviously he's off to a great start this season.
Yeah, let's put a pin in Brandon Todd, because we do have him later in the show, and let's jump over to Dubai, where Jon Rahm wins the DP World Tour Championship and the race to Dubai. Kyle, I believe it was Wednesday, and when you were out here touting saying Jon Rahm's going to win this thing, I think it's time for him. What's your take on this?
Yeah, it seemed after I saw the three wood from Rory on Thursday, I kind of recanted on that.
I saw your tweet.
Rahm seemed like, I mean, look, like these order of merit, Race to Dubai, whatever you want to call it, these guys on this list, it's a who's who list. I mean, it is the best guys, and it fit that Rahm would join, you know, the list of Molinari and Rory and Stenson and Westwood and all these different guys that won it. It made sense. And especially so because he won this tournament back in 2017. He's had the best second half of the year of anybody in golf. I think it's probably him, and you probably throw Rory in there, maybe Brendan Dodd, I don't know. But he's had the most, I think, under the radar, like just elite second half of the season. And it just made sense for him to kind of finish it off like this.
Yeah, to that point, since the U.S. Open, he has absolutely piled up top fives and top tens worldwide. He has three wins on the European Tour since the U.S. Open. And what I thought was interesting about this, Mark, is that he took 6 weeks off from his last start, which was that Open de España. And we kind of see this go both ways, right? You know, you want to play enough to keep your game sharp, but you don't want to play too much where we go back to that kind of fatigue aspect of it. I was interested to see six weeks feels like a long time to me, but I'd love your opinion on kind of the balance between rest and, you know, staying in playing shape.
Well, for someone like Rahm, who, as you list, is in contention all of the time, the rest is tantamount to success. That 6 week thing you highlight, Rick, for me just highlights something else. He's quickly up to number three in the world. This guy turned professional in the summer of 2016. Okay. Since then, he's amassed 10 wins worldwide. He's contended in major championships, hasn't pulled one off yet. And so clearly he's the guy for the big stage. Clearly, he doesn't back down for anyone. We saw that at the Ryder Cup in Paris when he took down Tiger head-to-head on Sunday afternoon in what turned out to be a crucial point in securing the cup for Europe. So he's this big-time player with a big-time mindset. And his first start out, I called him there at the Quicken Loans at Congressional, which is a mean golf course. Okay,
didn't he almost win that tournament, Mark?
Dude, the guy was in contention. He finished second in the end, in the final. And I looked at this. And I remember my brother, who was doing Golf Central at the time, texts me and he goes, "What are you going to say about this Rahm?" And I text back, I'm like, "Legit. This guy moves it in both directions. He's powerful. And more than anything else, Rick, he's poised. And he's got this, the mindset, not of someone who's just playing to compete. He is playing to win." And that, to me, that guy can take 6 weeks off, like a Tiger Woods, and say, "I'm not concerned about who I am, about my technique, about who's playing. I'm going to do what I got to do to make sure that when I tee it up, I bring my best, because I'm a big game hunter." And he proved that in Dubai with what was a dominant performance. I mean, he had a number of good shots, okay? And he blew that six-stroke lead. I found it curious that all the commentators were harping on that. But when the chips were down, that 18th tee shot there at that golf course is like single file with trees on the left and that hazard, that stream that runs down the right. And the longer you hit it, the tighter it gets. Rahm gets up there with driver and just absolutely threads one long down the fairway and can hit a long iron in there. That speaks to how this guy shows up when the reckoning is to be had. And so because of that, I feel like he can take 6 weeks off and not be fazed.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable to add a little context to those awesome points, Mark. His first full season, 2017, he played 26 events, ended the year ranked fourth in the world. Like, it's just unbelievable how good he was right out of the gate. Three wins worldwide in each of his last 3 years. Kyle, I've run out of superlatives for Jon Rahm, so I'm going to defer to you and let you try to describe what this guy is.
Well, the thing for me is he wins all over the world, right? He wins Torrey, he wins in Dubai, he wins the Irish Open. You're like, I mean, it travels. Like, it feels travel, as Tiger would say. it's so impressive. Because there's some guys that you're like, I don't know, man, can you win on different courses? And I don't feel like there's a course that he can't win on. I mean, he wins it at La Hinch this year, and you're like, that's a wonky course. I mean, in terms of like professional tracks, and then he goes out and wins at a really long course like Dubai, like Torrey. He's got every shot. And I think for me, the next thing for him is getting into like real contention on a Sunday at a major. He's got some good finishes, finished fourth at the Masters. He had a strange T3 at the US Open this year where you're like, wait, he was in it,
right?
Which he kind of wasn't, but like, I want to see like final pairing on a Sunday. I don't know that if I like care that he wins. Like, I'm not demanding that. I want to see him like in that arena late on a weekend at a major championship. I think that's kind of the logical next step for him.
Yeah, I'm very much looking forward to him capturing one of those majors and really solidify. I mean, to think that the number three ranked player in the world is not, you know, a solidified stud in everyone's mind just because we, you know, grade people on majors so often. But let's put a pin in this here. What we're going to do on the other side is we'll play stock up, stock down with a handful of names after this 2019 fall swing. So stick with us.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
New CBS Monday.
Federal agents!
Hands where we can see them!
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire!
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violin Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10, 9 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, welcome back. Gentlemen, it's time. It is stock up, stock down. So I want to know whether you're buying or selling on a handful of names that have come out of this 2019 PGA Tour fall swing. And quite frankly, I mean, the real story here, and Kyle, you and I have talked about this, where we would have made a lot of money buying Brendan Todd stock 6 weeks ago. Yeah, 6 weeks ago. It's no longer a penny. Two wins. You know, he comes with another top five at the RSM. You know, Mark, this is where I really think this is going to be such an interesting point for Brendan Todd. A whole bunch of success recently in a short period of time, and now he's got another one of these breaks coming up where, of course, he can go play anywhere, but we might not see him for, I don't know, 6, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, whatever he decides to start his season. So if you are coaching Brendan Todd, how do you keep him kind of in shape, ready to go, looking forward to the 2020 calendar year?
All right. First off, I'm buying. And I'll tell you, I caught up with his coach, Bradley Hughes, the other day, who's a tournament winner in the World's Game in his own right. And Bradley said when they got together, when Brendan hired him, the work was beginning to take shape, and they sat over lunch in Athens, Georgia, where Brendan lives. And over lunch, Bradley goes, Brendan looked at me, and look, he hadn't had success yet, and he looked me straight in my eyes and said, I will win again. And Bradley's like, yes, you will. And so this is a guy that is obviously really strong deep down. You know, all of the tough times he's had have galvanized him some. In terms of the break now, the work that they've done has just built an element of stability to his golf swing, and he's very club face aware. So if you've got a stable golf swing, you've got a swing that is not that hard to kind of, you know, iron out the wrinkles, if you will. In fact, earlier last week, he and Bradley hooked up, and And Brendan just said, I just want to get the driver drawing a little bit more. This is after he was hitting fades down in Mayakoba to win over there. So that tells me that there's not too much going on. It's a simple, easy-to-apply approach. The guy's a winner. We've seen him win before. And now he's got the benefit of all this experience behind him. And I feel like he's playing with house money right now, Kyle.
Yeah, I love it when guys have won two in a row and they're like, you know what I need to do? I need to change my driver's swing. I'm selling on Todd. How about that? We'll disagree here. So I was looking back, 2014 was his other PGA Tour win. He was kind of on a mini heater. He finished in the top 10 five out of six tournaments, including the Byron Nelson, which he won. And after that stretch, after he kind of got off of that little six tournament stretch, he only had four top 10s on the PGA Tour in the next 4 years until this fall. And so you struggle. Was his fall awesome? And am I glad for him and think he's going to have a good 2020? Sure. But I don't want to buy a guy when he's coming off a first, fourth, because it's unsustainable. Like he can't sustain it at that level. So I'm selling Brendan Todd right now.
I've got to say the golf swing is different to when he won at Byron Nelson.
Yeah, okay? That's fair.
And I feel like the way he's hit driving it right now, there are certain golf courses, and you'll see one early over at Sony that will be right in his wheelhouse.
Yeah, and speaking of Sony, maybe it's a Jimmy Walker situation. I think somebody brought that up last week. Maybe he just goes like five or six wins over the next two or three years.
Yeah, I guess I'll break the tie here. I agree with Kyle in a standpoint of buying after a win fourth is difficult, but I do agree with Mark that this is a different player, and I am cautiously buying Brendan Todd. I think now that he's got, he's got money in the bank, he's got the tour card locked up for a while, he's basically put himself into East Lake already. He's going to be able to make the schedule he wants to make, and as kind of simple as it sounds, you hit fairways, you hit greens, you roll a couple of putts in, I'm pretty excited about him, so I will cautiously buy on Brendan Todd. The next guy here, I cannot feel the same way about, it's Jason Day, who in this 2019 fall swing, a 22nd at Zozo, a 31st at the CJ Cup, a missed cut at Mayakoba. And all the three of us have chatted about, what he means to this President's Cup team coming up in just a few weeks and how his game has kind of, fallen off. And to put the numbers behind that, he's currently ranked 31st in the world, Mark, and this is going to be his worst year-end ranking since 2012, where he was 37th in the world. So Jason Day, as far as the world rankings go, almost into uncharted territory in the last half decade or so. So I'm curious to hear if you're buying or selling on Jason Day.
Unless he puts Colin Swatton right back on his golf bag, selling Jason Day. You know, he's been bouncing around between buddies on the golf bag there. Colin, thankfully, is still a swing coach, and they hook up once in a while to make sure that the game is appropriate. But Colin said something to me that I really appreciated, and he said, they've got buckets they work towards. There's an emotional bucket, a mental bucket, a physical bucket, and all those buckets have to be full. And Jason, obviously, there's the family thing. And right now, when he's on the golf course, he looks like he's having fun, but it just doesn't look convincing to me. So I'd love to see Colin back on the bag, in which case I feel like he can become a threat again. But right now I'm going to have to sell, and I hate to say so because we need him to play well in that President's Cup in just a few weeks' time.
Yeah, I think this is going to be a real breaking point year for Jason Day. Kyle, buy or sell?
I'm selling. I think the thing that concerns me is that it's not like he kind of is who he is from tee to green. He's been like 50th, 54th, 56th the last three or four years. And the problem for him in 19 was just that his putter finally cooled off. I mean, he was the best putter in the world for, I don't know, like 13 through 16 basically. And yeah, he hasn't been the last 2 years. And I just don't know. I don't know. Maybe that's something you regain. Maybe I think that's a difficult one to answer because it's not the same as Tee to Green. And he was great from Tee to Green when he became number one in the world. Like that 2000, when did he become number one? 16, 15, whatever it was. He was like a top 10 player from Tee to Green, and he's not anymore. And I don't know that I see that getting better as he gets older, especially with kind of the injury history he's had. And I don't know. I don't see him regaining it the way that some other guys have.
Yeah, that's a round of sells for us on Jason Day. Kyle, to your point, I think, you know, a hot putter or a really good putter can mask a lot of things, which is a perfect segue into our next buy sell. Jordan Spieth, three events in this fall season, mixed bag. Eighth at the CJ Cup, 66th at the Zozo, 43rd at the WGC HSBC. Kyle, for kind of like stat heads like you and I, no strokes gained data at any of those. And from what I understand, you are holding a lot of Spieth stock in your account. And I'm wondering if it is time to sell or you're just going to hold through all this.
Well, the correct answer for you guys is that you actually can't buy any because it's all gone. Like I've already
you bought it all.
I own like 99% of the Spieth stock. I think Chris Solomon, no line up, owns the other 1%.
Notice that he wears Under Armour clothing as well, right?
Yeah, I know. I don't feel great about it. Here's the thing with Spieth, though. Like, I don't know that there's ever been a guy that's won that much at that age that it's like just completely disappeared on. And so that's sort of what I'm clinging to. Look, if the ship's going down to the bottom of the Atlantic or the Pacific, I'm going to be on it. It's going to be a Titanic situation, and I'm going to be going down with it because I refuse to sell any of my Spieth stock. And whenever he is wearing the green jacket to a Texas football game next fall, that's from 2020 and not from 20, whenever he won it, 15. You guys can replay this podcast.
oh boy. Okay. Well, I don't know if there's any stock left to buy, Mark, but if there was, where are you heading into 2020 on Jordan Spieth?
You see, this is a difficult one for me, and I'll tell you why. As a young golfer, I've always aspired to Bob Jones, who learned from various guys, Stuart Maiden and company. And the one lesson Bob Jones got that turned him into a winner was, if Walter Travis said to him, if you show me a man who can putt, I will show you a match for any man. Sure. Now, Spieth right now is putting like he was when he was dominant on tour. But I look at the schedule, Rick, and he's not going to go to places where you can hide from the driver. He's probably opening the season at Torrey Pines, and you better drive it around there. And then he's going to go down the way to Riviera, and you better drive it around there. And there are all these big dog golf courses where guys like DJ and Rory and Justin Thomas and this sort of crowd who drive the ball well are going to have the leg up. So can he compete with them when he gets on? Absolutely. But then there was the great philosopher Lee Trevino who said, there are two things that don't last. Professional golf are dogs that chase cars. Professional golf is the chip and putt for pars. Okay. So I'm selling Jordan Spieth right now, and I'm probably going to regret the sell, but I'm going to do it.
I'll buy Mark's stock too.
You can buy mine too, because I'm also out on Spieth. I agree. And if we were looking strictly at, you know, official world golf ranking numbers, Spieth, who is now down to 44th in the world. And even from that standpoint, like, he's not going to get the like the Hero World Challenge points because he's not going to be there. We talked about it with Phil Mickelson. When you start dropping out of like the top 50 in the world and you don't get those invites to WGCs, like, those points are a lot harder to come by. So if strictly official world golf rankings, I'm a little bit nervous on Spieth. But yeah, it feels like he's working very hard for par all the time, and that's a tough place to be. So I'm out on Spieth. You can have it, Kyle.
Yeah, I'll take it. He was how about this stat? He was seventh, I think this was his first year on tour, seventh in strokes gained driving in 2013. He was 176 last season. So
out of like 190 or whatever. I mean, there's only so many guys that qualify on that. So
it's tough.
I'll keep buying.
Yeah, the price is real cheap, Kyle. You're getting a good deal now. All right, let's run through a couple quick of the Korn Ferry Tour grads. Scottie Scheffler, number 67 in the world. He's played 7 PGA events this fall season, 7 on 7 in cuts, 3 top 10s. I could not be buying more stock on 23-year-old Scottie Scheffler. Kyle, you know how I feel about him. Buy or sell on Scottie Scheff?
I'm buying. I think who's the highest ranked former Texas Longhorn golfer at the end of 2020 is an interesting, if you can bet on that, there's probably somewhere you can. I have no idea, but that would be an interesting bet.
Yeah, with how quickly Scotty's probably going to run up the rankings. Mark, we'll throw it over to you. The kid is 23 years old. His game seems much more mature than that. Buy or sell on Scottie Scheffler?
Big time buy. And you said it earlier with Mickelson falling out the top 50. Scotty quickly up to 67th in the world at the time of this podcast. He'll play early next year, and he'll probably garner more points, which gets him in the big World Golf Championships events. This boy's on the up, and I'd be prepared to wager to your statement, Kyle, that he may be the low guy on the rankings, the low Texas guy at the end of next season.
Well, Cole Hammer might pass Jordan Spieth at this point.
So. Yeah, it's not a Spieth versus Scottie Scheffler head-to-head. It might be like a Cole Hammer, Scottie Scheffler bet. Okay, this is an interesting one because Lonto Griffin, who we know captured a win earlier this season at the Houston Open, he kind of, I don't want to say he limped to the finish line of this year, but the results weren't as good in the last handful of tournaments, but was awesome to start the 2019 season. Griffin does have a much bigger sample size to kind of work with, which, Kyle, I think this is kind of similar to your Brendan Todd analysis when, you know, we've had bigger sample sizes to look at this guy. Buy or sell Lonto Griffin?
I'm going to sell. It's less about, I mean, it's a little bit about his performance, but it's more so about how he got there. And that's just with the putter. I mean, he's 12th on tour in putting right now. I think he's 12th, something like that. He's 12th. So he's gained a stroke around with his putter, which is like if you finish there, that you'll be number one on the tour. And that's just not, you can't keep that up. And so I'm selling Lonto Griffin. I like him, but I'm going to sell him.
Mark.
Kyle, by that argument, you're going to have to sell Spieth too, because haven't you just made some putter observation and the ball striking hasn't been there?
Well, the thing with Spieth is that he's, over the course of his career, been like a top 25 ball striker, and he's like behind. I mean, you probably gained more strokes on the PGA Tour than he did last year from tee to green, so there's room for improvement.
Yeah, there is. Sorry, Rick, I didn't mean
to. No, the thing with Spieth is that he's too deep on it now, Mark. He has to keep going back to that.
Again, I'm going to the bottom of the ocean with this thing.
He's committed to this. Lonto Griffin, Mark, is this a flash in the pan early in the 2019 season? Like we sometimes see guys have a good fall and then they go quiet for a while, or are we buying this guy moving forward?
You use a good term there, flash in the pan, although that can be sort of misconstrued. But, you know, a little while back is at the Safeway Open in the fall, there was a guy called Emiliano Grillo who just was, I thought, a superstar. And Grillo's game's fallen on hard times a little bit, and that's just indicative of not just the golfer but the competition. And so it was a cool win. It's a fantastic story. Lonto Griffin, he's set up for the rest of the year. Heck, he's set up for his career, basically, after a win. But I'm going to sell.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And then we'll wrap with one last quick one here in the buy-sell for the Korn Ferry Tour grads. Xinzun Zhang, who is number 128 in the world. He has 5 wins worldwide since 2014, but it's been a bit of a mixed bag on the PGA Tour this season. Missed cut, 60th, 7th, 16th, 4th, 38th, 48th, missed cut. That is a mixed bag. Kyle, buy or sell on Zhang?
I'm purchasing. He's got 28 rounds played in the fall, and he is top 25 in strokes gained tee to green. So he's a guy that, I mean, he's gaining 1.2 strokes around. It's not a small sample size, to be honest, compared to the rest of the guys that are measured. And yeah. I think that if you're existing at that number, you're going to have some success. Is he going to go out and win two or three tournaments? No, but I really like him. And, you know, if you look at the guy who last year finish first on the Korn Ferry regular season points list, that was Sung Jae-im. And so he's in good company in terms of like what the just the guys that have gone before him that have kind of been in that position.
We certainly like Sung Jae here. Mark, how do we like Zhang comparatively?
Well, if you go back and look in the history of these podcasts, there was a less accomplished host than you, Rick, who hosted this thing. His name was Kyle Porter. And talking about Korn Ferry grads, and Kyle said to me, who do you like coming out? And I said, Zigzag. I love his game. He's been on the PGA Tour before, went back through the Korn Ferry Tour, and I highlighted him as someone to pay attention to. So just like Kyle and his ship, I'm going to stay on my ship. But this guy's stroke average is 70.7 right now. And, you know, you can look at strokes gain metrics and such. If you add together 470s and that's your stroke average, that's 8 under par. And there's certain places that you're going to have your good weeks and be lower, and other places that if you do just that, you'll be fine. So I feel like Zhang is going to just continue what he's doing. I'm buying.
I love it. All right. I've got a couple other quick topics for us to get through before we put a bow on this. And there's nothing like wrapping up a calendar year without looking forward to the first full week of April. So I want to turn our attention to Augusta and kind of see if there's anybody we're interested in terms of who could possibly win this event. So to kind of put this into perspective, the big boys in terms of the betting market have moved a little bit over the last few months. Brooks is still your favorite at 9-1, followed closely behind by Rory at 10-1. Tiger is always going to be up there at 12-1. And the run that Rahm has been on has dropped his number pretty significantly. He's down to 14-1. So those are your four big-time betting favorites for this event. So, Kyle, we'll start with you. Is there anybody from that list or anybody that you're looking for trending towards Augusta come April?
I think I might call my shot right now.
Do it.
Okay, we ready for this?
I'm ready. I'm writing it down.
I'm going. I mean, I'll probably end up picking Rory, but I'll go X-Man, Xander. Masters, wow. Masters champ, T2 last year, 25-1 is a good number right now. I think people just don't realize how, I mean, he made a leap last year. Like we talk about this in other sports where you go from, talk about a lot in, I think maybe the NBA, like you go from your rookie year to your second or third year and guys just make leaps. We're seeing that with Luka Doncic right now. Right. And I think that this is the first ever Xander Schauffele's Luka Doncic comparison, maybe the last.
You're breaking ground.
But he made a leap in terms of his consistency from tee to green. And he's really, really good. And I'm going to call him as my 2020 Masters winner.
All right. I don't mind that at all. I'm going to go. I'm a huge Justin Thomas fan. JT, like I could, if we were buying stock on JT, I'd own it all. But the experience that you need around Augusta has me a little bit interested in Matt Kuchar at 60-1. You know, he's piled up top tens there, just hasn't been able to don the green jacket. So Mark, is Rory going to get the career grand slam? Can Tiger go back to back? Is it someone else? Who should we be looking for in Augusta?
Well, look, if Rory did win, then I'd happily spend the $100 I'm going to put on John Rahm, because this guy, we've just talked about this. He is a big game hunter. He knows how to play Augusta National. He seems, if I watch the interview that after the win at in Dubai, he seems like he's almost driven by Seve Ballesteros. And Jose Maria Olazabal was the same way. He's got two wins there. Sergio finally got his. The Masters is special to everybody, but especially special to the Spanish folks. And with Seve being such a hero around those areas, and every Tuesday night they sort of drink a toast to him at the champions' dinner. I feel like John Rahm wins the green jacket, and that'll make me $1,400 rich.
I like that. And Rahm, you know, his first start in Augusta was 2017. He tied for 27th, which first timers we know don't win this event. Backed that up with a fourth place finish in 2018 and 18-9 in 2019. This guy seems to like the course. I would love to see him don the green jacket this April. And then, gentlemen, let's wrap up with one last item here. Let's look to the LPGA Tour. So Se Young Kim, wins the CME Group Tour Championship for a record 1.5 $1 million. And the story out of the LPGA Tour is the 2020 schedule gets released. It's got record purses. It's got more events. This seems like a really big step forward for the LPGA Tour, Kyle. Is this where one, I want to get your reactions to the increased prize pool and the increased events, but like, is this an opportunity where we're just going to see a bigger spotlight on the LPGA Tour? Maybe they partner with some of these fantasy websites, or I don't know, gamble as gambling becomes more integrated in our US ecosystem here. Like, is this a launching point for the LPGA Tour?
I don't know. I felt just in covering golf broadly this year, more of an emphasis on women's golf. And I don't know what that was. I don't know if it's the Augusta National Women's Amateur. I don't know if it's more of a personal interest. They went to some cool courses this year. You saw the, what was the course down in Charleston that they went to? I can't remember. It might've been Charleston Country Club, but whatever it was a great course. And I don't know if we're going to look back and be like, oh, 2019, big jumping off point. But I do think, and this was talked about after the tournament yesterday, that everything's just headed in the right direction with the LPGA. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe in 15 years, we look back and say, well, that was a dumb statement. But it does feel like that things are headed in a good, healthy direction for LPGA golf.
Yeah, I could. I think it's funny when you said that. Like, I could probably name more golfers on the LPGA Tour now than I ever could, which I don't know if that's a measurement or a metric of anything, but it is interesting that there is more of a spotlight. And I wonder if, Mark, man, correct me if I'm wrong here. When it was the web.com tour at the time, try to kind of offset with the PGA Tour where they like start on Sunday and end on Wednesday so that they could get more eyeballs. I feel like, you know, you've got the Golf Channel. There should be live golf on every day of the week. And I wonder if the LPGA Tour might try something like that to get us more live coverage.
Well, you've got to credit Mike Wan. I mean, the commissioner, since he's been at the helm, this tour has just grown in leaps and bounds. And he's the kind of guy that's not afraid to try, you know, and to venture into uncharted territory. So perhaps that might be the thing. For me, it's the personalities that are coming to the fore, and perhaps they come into the fore because there's added emphasis and coverage. But you've got some nice looking players and some fun people, and they are so accommodating to the fans. To me, you know, I don't sound like I follow NASCAR, but I do. And it's such a fun fan experience to follow NASCAR because you can get almost into the cockpit of the car. And I get the same sense here with the LPGA Tour. With the PGA Tour, it's like you've got these big guys and they're on the other side of the rope and they'll sign your autograph if you're lucky to get amongst the throng. Where on the LPGA Tour, the players are really engaged with the fans. And I think the fandom appreciates that sort of stuff. So I think it's a pretty cool property right now. So I expect that, you know, we're going to see continued growth from where we currently are.
Who's your guy in NASCAR, Mark?
Well, would it be kind of bad if I said Jimmy Johnson? You know, Carl Edwards, my wife worked for Aflac Sports Marketing for a while, so I've always followed Carl Edwards too because he drove the Aflac car for a while. So I just like watching it. I like to listen to the – I mean, isn't it crazy how a guy can be going at that speed, you're doing an interview with an announcer with his headset? That's just completely nuts, and I appreciate that sort of stuff.
I love it. Well, I think that is a perfect let's do this to wrap it up. This is not on the outline, so this is coming right at it.
I thought that was perfect.
It's Thanksgiving week, so let's do this. Let's do what you're most thankful for in the world of golf. How about that? And I'll start, just so you guys have time to figure this out. I'm just very thankful with how deep the PGA Tour and golf is in general. I think to Mark's point about the LPGA, the star power and the golfers that we have are really incredible. Almost all of them seem like really good guys. I think the tour, especially now that Tiger is back in the winner's circle, is in such an awesome place. So that is what I'm thankful for in the world of golf. Mark, what say you?
Well, I'm thankful for this First Cut podcast. It's my source of information for certainly. I read all of his stuff. But me personally, I'm thankful for fast golf balls and forgiving golf club heads.
There you go. I love it. Kyle, wrap us up here. What are you thankful for in the world of golf?
I'm thankful for Brooks setting the table for 2020. Rory Brooks, 2020. Let's go. Every major.
It's going to be awesome. Beautiful. Well, that's Kyle Porter. Follow him on Twitter. It's at Kyle Porter CBS. And Mark Immelman, it's at Mark_Immelman. I'm Rick Gaiman. It's at Rick Run Good. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Enjoy the Thanksgiving. Don't eat too much.
Thanks, Rick.
Boys.
All right, boys.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest three words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.